I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 488. All nerdy.
All the time.
All right, this is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good. I love me a long weekend.
Oh, you know, long weekends, they're good weekends. They're the ones that you want to keep.
Forever, baby.
Over and over and over again. But you can't have them over and over again. Because the man won't let you. No, they'd still be special. If every weekend was a long weekend, it would still be special because you would find new things to do. You'd be like, oh man, 4 days on, 3 days off. That's like a good thing.
You'd be like, ugh, Tuesdays. I've got the case of the Tuesdays.
I'd rather have a Tuesday case than a Monday case.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
4 day work week, I'm down with that. I'm down with that. Maybe I was just born to be European. I don't know, but I'm not, so I can't, and I lament over the fact. But hey, enough about that. Let's talk about nerdy things.
I like talking about nerdy things.
You know, it's one of my favorite pastimes. It's part of the reason why we've been doing this for so damn long. We have a bunch of nerdy things to talk about. Geeky things, dorky things. I don't care which way you like to label yourself. It's all nerdy, all the time over here.
All the damn time.
All day, day. That's what we do. So, we're going to talk a little bit about Civil War. So, spoiler alert, because we're going to talk about the whole damn thing now that Panda has actually seen it.
Yep. So, and maybe next week I'll talk about Apocalypse, because I'm seeing that, too.
So, I guess I'll need to see Apocalypse then?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want to, I'm not going to force you. But I'm seeing it, so...
So let's talk about Civil War, because this is going to be a big conversation for us.
I'm going to say this is probably going to turn into a very sisterly debate, which does sound a lot like fighting, because I do feel like I had mentioned last episode that once I finally got to see it, that I felt like knowing us and our personalities, that we most likely not have the exact same opinion and would have to talk it out. And I was absolutely right about that. We are going to have to talk this out.
Yeah, you know, like sisters do, we got to talk it out. So here's the deal. The premise of Civil War is that Cap becomes aware that his friend Bucky, who is the Winter Soldier, is out in the world and is being hunted because it appears...
It looks like he be doing.
Right. It appears that he may have, you know, come out of retirement, so to speak, and killed some people. Some very important
lots of people.
And the world doesn't take too kindly to that. In the process of trying to keep that from happening, some of the Avengers, Scarlet Witch, also accidentally kill some people.
Yeah.
Okay, it wasn't on purpose.
No. Okay,
it was collateral damage. But it was a chunk of collateral damage, which sends the world into a conversation about, you know, these heroes that are, you know, helping us.
But seem to not have any type of checks and balances and seem to be above the law.
Well, it's not that they're necessarily above the law, but there is a... There's no protocol to, like... Where they go and what things they intervene with or not, and who's responsible for all of the collateral damage that is caused by it. You know, like, they protected everybody from New York, and it's one of those questions that, like, realists nerds ask each other, like, in groups, you know, when you get down to the, okay, I get Superman comes in and, like, saves the day and whatever, but look at all the buildings that are damaged in the process. And, like, you know that there are people that get cut by the glass that falls and things like that. Like, no one ever talks about that. And who's responsible for that? Like, does the city have to pay for that? Does Superman have to pay for that? It's not like Superman gets paid to do what he's doing. So if he did have to pay for it, like, where was he going to get the money? So is he going to be running, like, merc missions in order to make money to pay for the damage he does when he's saving people? Like, there is a conundrum there. And that's kind of what Civil War goes at, in that the world says, hey, look, we know that you guys specifically are working to protect us, the Avengers, okay? But there are a lot of people out there with powers that are gifted that are not necessarily positive. And we don't actually know with any rhyme or reason where you guys are going. You perform all these operations with no sanctions, at no one's necessarily behest. Like, it's very, very strange and weird and probably not good to have a superpower, which basically that's what the Avengers are, running around without having to at least explain themselves to someone, especially in the wake of all the damage that you cause in the pursuit of, like, your good.
Right.
Okay, like, you may perceive somebody, the Avengers may perceive somebody to be evil and diabolical and go after them, and it may be a dictator that was put in place to keep a region stable that they've now wiped out. So there are a lot of political and technical things that really need to be in place.
I feel like we're experiencing a very similar subplot between the dissonance between Batman and Superman, and in Batman versus Superman, Rise of the Justice, my balls.
Your balls?
His balls. Okay, like, balls of steel. And I mean, if you've seen that movie, I'm very sorry. And if you didn't, then you dodged a very serious bullet. But I mean, here we have this superhero who is currently on our side and has, you know, like you said, been fighting for good. But there's been so much devastation and death. And I think that's where Batman's kind of like, he needs to be put in check or he's bad and blah, blah, blah. I mean, that movie was shit, but beside the point. But it's like the same kind of plot. Like, who do they answer to? And, you know, what happens to all those people who, okay, yes, you've saved millions, but you took out, like, one of the islands of New York. And, like, that's like a couple hundred, like, you know, a couple hundred thousand. And, you know, these ripples affect the lowest common denominator of human beings who do not have the same abilities and or, you know, immunities to things. So it's a big moral dilemma put on top of humans that are no longer like base humans. They're like evolved humans or metahumans or whatever.
Or mutants, just depending upon whose books you're reading. And that piece is the crux of what's going on in Civil War, is that the governments have come together, united through the UN, the United Nations, and said, hey, we actually want to impose some sanctions, and not necessarily sanctions, but some guidance. And part of that guidance is, we need all you guys to sign off on the fact that you're not going to go in someplace without there being some kind of request, briefing, and need for you actually to go in and do these things, because we need to be prepared for the collateral damage.
Like, oh man, we know they're going to go through the buildings. Let's get all the safe people out. Let's get all the, like, women and children out and the old people.
Exactly. Like, and so you guys need to sign off on this. You can't just go off on your own and decide somebody's bad or evil and take them out with no...
I feel like they should just call it the Avengers. Can you give us a minute? Like, initiative.
Right.
Can you give us 10 minutes? Can we put up a barrier or something?
And so these accords need to be signed off. And if they're not signed off on, then the Avengers can't exist anymore. Okay? And so there's a lot of people that have, like, feelings about that one way or another. And frankly, I'm all for having that sanctions, because I love the idea of heroes being able to be heroes. And, you know, if there's somebody who's trying to commit suicide, going in and dealing with that one-off as a person, you don't need the UN to sign off on that. But if you're going to go into a war-torn area, I don't care how
powder keggy.
Exactly. You know, in a different country, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of collateral damage, and I don't care how much you plan for things. You can't control people, environments, and things like that. You could be the catalyst for catastrophic loss of life and damage, and there has to be some chain. There has to be accountability, and there has to be a, look, there was an overriding reason why we needed to go in. We needed to go in, and we did this because we needed to protect these people, because this government said so and this government said so, and not just because, oh, I was having my computer do some research and, wow, this is a really bad guy, and since nobody else could get to him, I used my superpowers to get to him. Like, that doesn't hold water. Like, larger scale invasion needs to be completely thought out. There needs to be a plan for recovery. There needs to, like, in the real world, these are all things that are considered before any operation is greenlit for people to go in and do anything. And that's really what those accords were about. It's not necessarily getting everybody on a registry so they know who every mutant is or every person with superpowers is, but to get this group of completely powerful beings to only go into places when it's been decided it's the right move and there are these other plans in place, you know, to recover afterwards. And I found it very interesting that, you know, they kind of swap positions, because initially in the comic books, Cap is all for signing it and Stark is not. Because again, you know, at this point, he's a mad alcoholic. Correct. And he's, you know, a raging alcoholic and all these kinds of stuff. But they flipped things in this movie and made it so that Cap was not for signing and Stark was, which is completely out of their characters. And
I mean, I think the reason that happened, more or less, is because they gave Iron Man, they gave Stark that personal jab with that scene with...
Yeah, Alfred Woodward.
If you want to get an actress who can move you to nearly tears...
In one scene. Or less.
By an elevator.
It's Alfred Woodward.
She could do it. Like, damn. And like, as soon as I saw her, I'm like, she's gonna say some shit that's gonna make this hard ass who thinks he's, you know, who's kind of high on, you know, his ego, and it's gonna smack him like enough pegs for him to be like, you know what, maybe I should think about my life choices.
Well, I
and
think,
sure enough, she kind of came in and did that.
I think, you know, for Iron Man, for Stark, it's a combination of things that are going on in this movie, because really Tony Stark should not be moved by one person, okay, with his super ego. But it's not just the one person. You know, he and Pepper are off right now.
Right.
So he's doing a lot of soul searching about that. Then, you know, he's on the back end of his, you know, coming to grips with all the things that he was creating before the events of the movies were really leading to the world's destruction. And so, you know, he's actually trying to come to grips with the fact that, like, most of the pain and suffering that is happening in the world right now is coming at the end of a Stark missile. So literally his name is all over that stuff.
Oh man, and having to live with that, knowing that that is your lot in life,
and
that you are perpetuating that.
Right.
It's gotta be heavy.
But
I mean, I'm just saying, like that whole scene with her though must have been like that last tiny hair on that giant bundle. And it just broke.
You've got all those things going on, and that's what's supposed to make it viable for you to believe that Tony is, in fact, having this crisis of conscience. So that when he has a conversation, or just is listening, because all he's doing really is listening to Alfred Woodard at the elevator.
She completely won that scene. Like, hands fucking down.
Yeah. So when that happens, it kind of makes sense that when the Accords come along with all this, you know, internal stuff that Tony is going through, that's how it can make sense that, you know, the super ego of all egos is actually taking a step back and going, actually, no, checks and balances would be a good idea. Like, remember, the whole reason that he was trying to build that super AI was because he wanted to have checks and balances. And that's why he destroyed all of his suits.
And then it just turned into,
you know,
turned into Ultron and fucked shit up.
Right. And so then Vision came to be and put everything back into balance. So Tony is really, like, on this mission now, which is interesting in the Marvel Universe, of checks and balances and being balanced in general, where, you know, traditional canon, he's not balanced. He's a raging alcoholic. The arc reactor never gets out of his chest, and ultimately it is the cause of his death. So it's very strange to be sitting in movies where we have a Stark that does not have an arc reactor in him to actually sustain him. Like, he is not going to die, and so it allows you to then have a Stark that can be self-respective and not the raging alcoholic that he's supposed to be. So it can fit that he would actually be on the side of signing and going in when it's sanctioned with a plan and a plan for recovery and, you know, all this stuff that Tony, you know, normally would not be the guy leading that conversation. But it's very, very weird to have Cap on the other side of that. And now with the new comics.
Right, which I also want to kind of talk a little bit about.
We'll talk about that for a hot minute, because
I don't know if I necessarily would say that it seems foreign. It's strongly foreign that Cap would not be on the sign for on the.
Well, I read the comics, so it's very foreign.
Right. Well, because you already have your established foundation of what.
Because it's canon.
Happens in the canon.
And we're off canon, right. So it's foreign when you're off canon.
Right. Well, I mean, I didn't read them, so, like,
right.
I kind of
so
witnessed this.
So it's not foreign to you.
Leading up. Right. This is a different perspective. And I think not reading that let me walk away from the movie going, okay, you know, here's Captain America who's, you know, all about, you know, fighting Nazis and saving America and fighting for freedom and all of this stuff.
He is literally supposed to be a fighting embodiment of Uncle Sam.
So when I think about that, I'm like, okay, so America, where we kind of tell you, you can kind of do what you want to do outside of, you know, like, murdering and raping and stuff like that.
Yeah, I thought of that.
Here's your freedom to the extent that we can give you freedom and
life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Right. And all of that. And you get this, hey, we want to be able to tell you where to go and who to help. And this kind of stamps, you know, tramples all over his ideal of, you know, freedom. And that freedom that the Avengers have had of, you know, doing the right thing, whichever that subjective right thing is for
right.
X, Y, or Z.
And it is very subjective because, you know, there's a difference between freedom of choice and, you know, when it comes to, you know, fighting and waging a war, there are certain freedoms that you don't have. Like, we have a regimented army and military for a reason. Like, our armies and, you know, the Marines can't just decide, you know what, there's some bad people down in Madagascar. We're just going to roll down there real quick and take them out because that's what we do. Like, no.
Right. You can't do that.
Right? And ultimately, the Avengers are functioning as a massively superpowered militia. Like, they are going and they are entering regions where they are carrying out these massive missions where they are taking out bad guys, leaders, leadership. Like, they are functioning like a militia, and therefore, they need to be regimented like one. And Cap, who was in the army, it's so interesting that he does not, now in his super state, seem to cotton to that notion anymore.
Right, he's probably like, nah, no thanks. And I mean, so I mean, you kind of got this really interesting ideal of what freedom means to whoever. And then what absolute power looks like and, you know, how power can corrupt.
Absolutely.
And you do have this really interesting dynamic between Iron Man and Captain America. And then you have, you know, you've got all these really other great tensions and subplots that I know were part of, I don't want to say canon because I didn't read it, but after I saw Age of Ultron, where we got, you know, Quicksilver and
which is not canon, so again, I'm going to preface
no,
that.
No, but in some of the comics, because, like, I looked into, like, when the whole Vision thing happened, and in
You should probably read Civil War. And I should. I definitely recommend that you read phase three, because it's about to be all up in your world, so you might want to do that.
But, like, going from the movies, like, going from the Age of Ultron movie and the whole creation of, you know, Vision and, like, this
movie mode.
And then this interesting relationship-ish thing between Vision and Red Witch. And I know in one of the...
Scarlet Witch.
Apparently they kind of have, like, a thing, sort of, since, you know, Vision is, you know, not exactly human and is still trying to figure out how things work and are perceived and all of that.
Vision is not human, but Vision is a biological-based life form.
So it's, like, an essence loving a butterfly.
Here's the deal. Ultimately,
powers.
Vision most easily identifies with Scarlet Witch out of everyone in the Avengers group. Again.
Well, because her powers are, like, real-ish powers. Like, they weren't injected into her or some mutation of some sort. It was, like, just a manifestation. Like, I really kind of dug how we're starting to see, you know, Vision trying to pull himself out of his deep existential speak to kind of bring things down to, like, a common denominator. Like, you see him trying to reason with the amount of reason that a normal person would have, and the sympathy and trying to understand. Like, I loved all that. And granted, I'm a big Paul Bettany fan, so, like, sign me fucking up
for more. How can you not be?
Like, oh my god.
It's impossible.
Paul Bettany all day.
All day, like, every day.
And, like, it's just...
Twice on Sundays.
Oh, man. Yes. So, I mean, but moving on in the story. So,
yes.
Crimson Witch is, you know,
god
kind of...
damn it! Scarlet Witch!
Oh.
Scarlet Witch! Not Red Witch! Not Crimson Witch! We're not there! Scarlet Witch!
Orange Red Mentalist. I'm just gonna make up all these names. No, alright.
Scarlet Witch.
Like Scarlett Johansson, I should make that assimilation. Anyway.
Even though she's Widow, but move on.
I know. Anyway, so Scarlet Witch.
Yes.
You know, like you said, is indirectly at fault for some lies.
A tragic loss of lies that were not the bad guys. They were all civilians.
All good guys. Right. They were all innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't spill the blood of the innocent, because as soon as you do, someone's like, hey, hold up. Anyway, so the whole UN plot is going on, and the Avengers are trying to figure out where they sit on this whole, are we signing this and becoming, like, government lackeys? Or are we standing firm in the ground and holding our freedom and our choice as, like, our primary directive? And, of course, like, you hear certain people sign up, and, you know, and you hear, you know, Iron Man. Okay, he's totally down.
He is pro signing.
He's pro. You're right. He's all about that.
Pro the Accords.
And then you've got Black Widow, who's like, you know what? I've kind of been like an agent, double agent. That's kind of what I do. So I'm just gonna do that, and kind of be that. That's fine. You know, and of course it seemed like all the people who were like military were like, nah. Like, Cap America was like, no. Falcon was like, you know what? I'm kind of with Cap on this one. And, like, it was so weird that, like, the ones who seem to have a strong military connection in their stories are all kind of like, I'm not sure how I feel about being somebody's lapdog and not being able to judge for myself.
And again, like, this thing goes along that line of, like, absolute power corrupting absolutely, right? Because the Avengers have basically been, you know, functioning outside of authority, okay? And I think it's very interesting that, you know, everyone who, their entire careers, they had spent up until that point reporting to authority, now that they did not have to report to an authority, were like, yeah, no, we like this. Meanwhile,
I like someone not telling me what to do.
Meanwhile, everybody, pretty much with the exception of Rhodey, on the other side of the world, who had never had to report to an authority and did their own thing, you know, initially, Scarlet Witch, Widow, Iron Man, like, all of these guys who had been held in went, actually, no, when we think about this, like, especially after what just happened in this last mission that we ran, like, no, we should probably stay out of the big issues until somebody raises their hand and say, hey, we need you. this is what's going on, and this is what we think needs to happen, and we're sanctioning you, we're asking you to go in and take care of this, then we should go in. We shouldn't just decide on ourselves that, like, this dictator sucks, and we should just take out their whole regime. And hey, if we end up taking out, you know, some nice people in the process, well, not on us. We did the good thing. Like,
so the ways of the, what is that saying? It's like the ways of the many are, I don't know, I'm going to butcher it. But something about the greater, something for the greater good. Like, there's going to be some.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
Yeah, that one. It's kind of been decided. You can kind of see where everyone's kind of sitting on this. And the UN meeting happens where they're about to ratify the
which is basically an excuse to introduce Black Panther, and I was all for it. I have to say, I have to take back everything I said about Chadwick Bosworth. He does an amazing T'Challa.
So amazing. Oh, man. Like, as soon as I saw that fine-looking mofo, I was like, here you are, baby.
I need them to speed up the Black Panther movie because, oh, my God.
Like, did he all about that.
Bananas-ass job.
And I mean, and talk about, because I know that they're royalty. And like, as that, yes. That whole
intro. He is now the king of Wakanda.
Well, yeah. I know.
His dad died.
But like, I mean, like, I just, the minute you saw him, like, his presence, like, talk about having a regal presence and, you know, not being conceited about it and, like, just wanting to do right and,
well, I mean,
you know.
Here's the thing. I knew that Chadwick could act the part. Okay, my concern was he going to be big enough? Because Black Panther was always a hunk of a man. And not just, like, on the sexy side. He was a extremely built
right,
dude.
Because, like, warriors. Like, you know, even
exactly.
Though we're in a much more civilized thing, like, this tradition in being fighters and strong and providers and protectors, like, you kind of have to have.
Right.
No offense.
And like, so my concern was, would Chadwick be able to get big enough for me to believe?
Oh, I did.
And he got the right amount of beefy. Like, he didn't go, like, you know, full-on Vin Diesel at it. But you could definitely see, like, he tightened up and he got a little bigger. And that was great. But what I was more impressed by was, you know, some of the stuff that you were speaking to. His commanding of the room, because he definitely comes off the way he should, which is basically Black Panther is like Bruce Wayne, but even more badass.
I mean,
because
he
has some power.
Fucking rich, and
he's,
he is like
crazy
a kid.
Rich. Okay,
he's got
crazy
no parents.
Smart. Okay,
he got no
well, yeah. Now he's got no parents, but he is a billionaire. He is a philanthropist. He is an entrepreneur. He is a scientist. You know, he is incredibly smart. His
and,
level
and he
of deductive
does have this
reasoning
sense of caring. Like
he does.
He's definitely
so like
cares.
Seriously, he is Bruce Wayne, but with superpowers and also black. So like there's so many things to love about Black Panther, but the way that they portrayed him in the movie and set him up, like, there's no way that people are not gonna see the Black Panther movie in droves when this comes out.
Right.
In droves.
Oh, no, absolutely.
His action was fantastic. The way they set up the suit was awesome. Okay, you believe that he can move as fast as he can and that he is as badass as he is. You believe that he is as smart as he is. Like, his character was set up perfectly to align with where the comics are right now.
And
I have a theory about why things are the way they are, and we'll get to that in a couple of minutes here. But
they
and you're not going to like it because it's tied into the new comic, so I have thoughts.
It made it very believable that he was, you know, even though he's royalty and even though he's all these other roles, like, they still made him believable as a human. Like,
yes.
He has pain. He suffers. He gets consumed by things. He can overcome things, all on that personal, emotional level. So it's not just like, I have to do right by my people. Like, he was still trying to find justice.
Yeah. I think
for himself.
I think that Panther is the first character in the movie that without doing, like, a big, long, drawn-out exposition on how he came to be Panther, I think that he is one of the most well-rounded.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And
absolutely.
And characters that they've introduced with depth. Okay, we very quickly see how Panther is born.
And I love how everyone's like, who's this guy in the suit? Like,
like, Where's the only black dude that you've seen this entire movie? Guess where? He's in the black suit. Just saying.
No, because we had Falcon.
But do we really want... All right.
And I mean, and Warhammer, technically.
Let me not start an argument about Falcon's blackness.
Well, technically, we got...
Because I don't want to start a flame war about Falcon's blackness,
I'm just gonna say this, though, because we've got
we gotta finish the rest of the story. We've gotten so many
white superheroes that they're like, oh, we gotta add another black one, guys. Like, we gotta to keep up with that. Everyone's gotta have like one black friend.
Yeah, we put
like,
one in jail. We cripple the other, and then the other one is like a king.
He's a fucking sexy beast who's gonna get all up into Storm's naughty bits. Anyway. Because I looked that shit up.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
Cosplay in the future, but anyway, that's neither right. here or there.
Continuing the story. So we now know why everybody's on the two sides that they're on. There's a big fight.
I mean, and Black Panther has a subplot where he's trying to kill Bucky because
Bucky supposedly turns out it wasn't Bucky. Okay. That did the attack on the UN, but this guy made it look like it was, so that's why.
Right.
Black Panther wants to kill him.
But I mean,
Captain America wants to find Bucky before everybody else finds Bucky because they believe that
he can take him on a romantic date and get his feels on.
And I'm just like, hold on. Why are you trying to find your friend and not bring him to justice? Because I know he's your friend, but hey, guess what?
The video showed,
you should be a person to look at things. Realistically, the video showed your friend as the person who put out this bomb, who killed a bunch of UN leaders. Okay, these are good people.
Okay, and he was just
and bystanders.
He was drunk in love, Ninja. He was drunk in love
as
with
Captain America, exactly. Because and again, it's so unlike Cap though to put his friend again, the one above the many.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Because innocent people got hurt. And died. Right. Captain America should be pissed about that.
I mean,
and not
Cap's going through a lot though, because you know Peggy Carter kind of dies in this movie.
Yeah,
and like
it's bullshit. Look,
kind of like
let's get to the nut of this because we need to have our discussion. Air quotes here.
Big things gotta happen.
Okay. So here's the deal. Ultimately, what ends up happening in the movie is we learn that Bucky actually did not. Set off the bomb and the attack. It was this other guy pretending very well, by the way, to be Bucky. And his whole mission was basically to create all this infighting within the Avengers because of everything that happened that they did at Sokovia, which, as you remember, did not end great as far as the Avengers and S.H.I.E.L.D. intervening. While they were able to save a bunch of people, the fact of the matter is that Ultron went after that area because it was remote and he figured the Avengers couldn't get to him fast enough and that there would end up being some casualties and they would have to live with that. And there were a whole fuck ton load of casualties, including this guy's entire effing family. And so he decided that since the Avengers fucked his family, he was going to fuck the Avengers family. And so it is a brilliant machination because what he is searching for is the thing that ultimately does break the Avengers. And I think it's the thing that should break them. Okay? Because of the way that everything shook down. So as you know, Bucky, the Winter Soldier, brainwashed into doing a lot of horrible things. Okay,
and is still completely aware of the things that his body does.
Yeah, so but just cannot make his body not do those things. Okay? Yep. Understand, and I'm completely with everyone, that, you know, when you are brainwashed to do something, it is out of the realm of your control. However, that does not absolve you from the things that you
do. That your body has done.
Okay? It just gives you a little bit of a moral pep. Did not choose to do these things, but you still did them. They still had consequences. They still affected people's lives, okay?
I mean, very much like Jessica Jones, where, you know, the Purple Man could make people do things.
Okay.
And they
didn't want to do those things,
with that,
but they still did them. Okay, and they still had to live with that. Nobody came back just because we went, oh, you're brainwashed, and there's no magic wand that undoes all the things that you did when you're brainwashed. Okay, and if you take a life, that life does not come back.
Right.
Okay, and Bucky took a lot of lives. And the crucial ones that this movie points out is that Bucky was actually the person that killed Tony Stark's parents. Okay.
And man, and what a nice setup and payoff, all of those little clips.
And I knew, because they kept focusing on that car accident and him going, I was like, whoever's in that car is very important to somebody in this movie. And it didn't dawn on me right until we hit the third act of the movie, before they did the reveal, I was like, oh my God, I know who's in that car.
Here's the thing, I knew it the minute, which is really weird because I was sitting there, and as you know, that whole Stark is at MIT and he's like about to give all these like newbies like grants to do their crazy freaking experiments, and he's doing that whole augmented, you know, going into his memory and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there and I'm like, so the self-made man who was sitting there always trying to achieve to be better than his father is clearly far more attached than you think. And I'm like, if you really wanted to go back in time to correct this, it's because something is going to happen or has happened that he has serious regrets about. And then, like, when you see Bucky on the motorcycle, I'm like, shit. And he's like, and I remember the flashback of, well, they didn't make it to the airport that night. And I'm like, aw, shit.
Yeah,
and it's not even that Bucky took out his dad. He was all like, doesn't matter, killed my mom.
Okay. Like, and that's the thing, like, I didn't piece it together that quickly, but as we got into the third act, I was like, okay, all right, and all the pieces came together before they did the reveal, and I was like, okay, well, I'm absolutely team Iron Man at this point, and the major reason that I was that way, and this is before Cap's reveal about the whole situation, is that, you know, that was the formative thing that made Tony change. Number one, that's when he went real heavy into alcohol and into like blowing out all of the weapons that Stark Industries was doing, because he thought that was the work that his dad was doing. So he was finally trying to take up his dad's mantle. But you could see how close and endearing and loving he was with his mom. And so when they got to the whole scene where you actually see Bucky beat the shit
out of his dad.
And then just immediately plug his mom. Like, the rage that filled my body, you would have thought that I was Stark. Okay? Mm-hmm. So then to hear that, and then turn and see the instrument of your parents' death, and ask him, do you even remember? And he tell you yes. And then to hear from Cap, from his own lips, not only did he know that it was an organized hit that was out against his parents, but yeah, he has known since he woke up and came back that it was Bucky that killed your parents. Like, there is no bigger fuck you, I'm actually not your friend. Because that's been a thing that Tony has wondered about his entire life since they passed away. And you're sitting on that and you call yourself my friend. Like, you have my back in missions and you held a secret like that from me.
Remember, Iron Man also, you know, even though he's always had, there's always been this weird, like, frenemy kind of, you know, playful / not playful banter between these two. Because, I mean, I think, you know, Iron Man, Tony Stark, always heard stories about Captain America from his dad.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of gave him, like, that little seed of, I fucking hated you, man. And, like, and they kept building that up so that you knew eventually when this reveal came that he would then be like, well, fuck you and fuck Bucky, let's fight.
Well, like, I mean, the big fuck you here isn't so much the Captain America thing, because he feels betrayed. Like, his dad spent all this time with Captain America and on this project and made that shield for him, and it was, you know, more attention that his dad gave him. But as he got older, he came to understand the need for that weapon, and that was a source of pride for his dad. And so that's where the hatred comes in when the reveal happens, is that this thing that was a sense of pride and was my father's legacy and mad work betrayed my father. by
and
not
killed my mom.
And you know what I mean? Like, betrayed my father and his memory and all these things that he did into this because he was not the true, honest, upstanding thing that, you know, my father was hoping to build. Okay? Like, and that's why he says you're not worthy of that shield.
And that's why he gave it back.
You know? Okay.
He could have just walked off with him and like, fuck you. But he's like, nope, I own this one.
The whole fight, like the moment where he was like, he's my friend. And like, almost with a tear in his face, Stark is like, I was too. And then they begin to fight. Like, that's such a poignant moment to be like, look, I get that, you know, you have a lot in common with this guy. And he was your friend. But what you seem to have forgotten was, I was your friend too. And so was my dad. My whole family. You betrayed all of us. And I think that it's a really poignant moment in that, you know, it's the moment where the movie is basically saying, look, Captain America actually is not...
I think he's in the wrong this time. Like, he's seriously in the wrong.
He's not actually in the right now. He has chosen a single personal friendship that he has placed above the nation's safety, his own safety, and the members of his team who were supposed to be his friends. And he's put this person above all that. By doing so, devalued all of it. And so that's why I was like, no, actually, I believe that Cap is in the wrong here. And it's really interesting for me to say, but I was like, I was Team Iron Man going into the movie because I just like Robbie Downey Jr. and I love his portrayal of Tony Stark. But then I got through the movie and I was like, holy shit, like Cap is completely in the wrong here. And it's so out of character for him. And I was really having a hard time struggling with it, but I was like, he's in the wrong, like Team Iron Man. Like,
I mean, here's what happened after I saw this movie, because like we said from the last show, like you wanted me to text you the minute I was done and tell you whose team I was on walking out of this movie. And literally, like, you stayed through all the little secret Easter eggs and all the stuff. By the way, we didn't even get to talk about Spider-Man, which...
That'll be another show because I need to talk about anime.
All right. I'm just saying, I'm really happy with the direction that they are going to go with that. Like, I can't wait for that. I'm salivating at the mouth about it. But walking out of that movie, because I went with my fiancé and two of our other friends, and they're all waiting for me to be like, I'm totally this. And I'm like, guys, I am so seriously conflicted. I'm like, because I feel like, and this is just me personally, if I were in a situation where I knew something really horrible that a friend of mine had done that indirectly fucked up or set another friend's life...
Directly fucked up, not indirectly. What he did directly changed the arc of Tony's life. It changed Tony's life. Not indirectly.
No. I'm saying from Cap. So if I was Cap and I knew my friend directly fucked with the whole life course of another friend, and I had to sit on that and decide whether or not it'd be wiser to tell them up front, knowing exactly who it is, knowing my personal connection to that other, like, Captain's in a really bad situation. Like, there's no good way to resolve either of these, because
you still step up to the plate. Because you worked
or you don't
Stark Senior.
The reveal happens, you own up to not saying anything, and you take whatever divine retribution is coming, which is exactly what Cap did.
See, this is and what, I'm sitting when there, you and I disagree.
And I'm just sitting there like, man, because I felt like no one was in the right here. Like, there was no...
No one is in the right. No one is in the right, but...
I couldn't jump on a
there
side.
There is a
like,
scale of more wrongitude.
But here's the thing. I mean, like you were saying, all these things from these other movies leading up to now, this destruction, a lot of this has kind of been centered around this whole Stark thing. So, you know, Stark's got all this horrible guilt and resentment because all of his choices up to now have led to a lot of death that he cannot avoid. His hands are bloodied no matter which
and
way you
spin. And here's the thing, though. So take the step back now. And the whole reason why he built up the arms program underneath Stark Industries is because he believed he was taking up the mantle that his... Because his father was working on weapons. So when his dad died, and he took over Stark, and finally got involved with the business, he carried on what he believed to be his father's work. If his father had not died.
Right.
if somebody had intervened and said, hey, here's what actually happened to your dad at an earlier point in time, he may not have actually built up all that weaponry.
Maybe.
Okay.
We don't know.
You don't know. But, like, again, there's nobody who is completely 100% right in this movie. I am completely with you. But there is a scale of more wrong. And where the more wrong comes in is that it's not like Cap was, you know, far away from Stark's dad. So it was like a person that he saw in passing. Every day. The whole reason that Cap even exists to this day. Because otherwise, the wimpy little guy that he was before going into the program would never have survived the war and he would be dead. So the only reason that he is alive today, the shield that he carries, which is the mantle of what he believes he is and his freedom, he owes all to Stark. Owes it all.
Which is why after that whole reveal and how it was an ultimate betrayal, he willingly left it behind to establish who he was outside of all of that.
Correct, because he's no longer America's boy. That's what the dropping of that shield is.
Right. And honestly, I think for a lot of the movie where he didn't have it, I think they wanted us to get used to the fact that there's a good chance he was going to walk away from it. There are several times that happened.
We gotta wrap this up, because we could talk about this movie, like, for multiple episodes. But here's the thing. So the new comics came out, because, once again, everybody's rebooting themselves, because things weren't really going the way that they wanted to. So DC is now doing Rebirth. They're bringing back Kid Flash, so he's not dead anymore.
Really?
Yeah. Dig this shit! So they come out with a new Captain America, and of course on the heels of Civil War, everyone is reinvigorated and there's more and new interest for Captain America. And the lead off for this comic is that Captain America has actually been a double agent all along and is a member of Hydra. So now, seeing that comic, my brain goes, okay, is the main reason that they swapped the canon positions for Civil War and Cap dropping his shield and going off with his ragtag now bunch of metahumans who are not part of the Avengers anymore? Is all of this because they're leading up to following these new comics and Cap is going to be fucking Hydra?
But here's the thing about that. So remember who he's got on his side. So we've got Captain America.
Remember that we're not going canon. But go ahead.
From the movie.
Yep.
It has it set up that we've got
Falcon.
Captain America.
Yep.
Falcon. Winter Soldier. Scarlet Witch.
Yep.
And Hawkeye.
Yep.
Against, you know, the Avengers as, you know, Iron Man, Black Widow, and Vision, and Spider-Man, or Boy, depending on where
you're looking. And Black Panther. Although Black Panther kind of sort of walking that line because he's helping Cap by putting Bucky back to sleep and keeping him safe. And when he's like, well, if they find out he's here, everybody's going to come for you. And he's like, let him come, let him try. And you're like, yeah, the Wakandans would fuck them up. So Black Panther, I actually wouldn't put on Iron Man's side. I would put him on his own side.
He's Swiss. He's all like
Swiss.
Just suit my agenda. Maybe. Nope.
So I'm out. So I wouldn't put Panther on a side.
So minus Panther. That.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, so you have Falcon, who, through the comics, I know eventually actually becomes Captain America.
Yep.
And I mean,
well,
the minute
that
I saw
was
the wings,
before
I'm like,
Rebirth.
Right, I know. But here's the thing, how is Captain like, hey Falcon, like, I know you're all American stuff, but like, hail Hydra. No, that's not gonna work.
But here's the thing. Okay, we don't know where the comics are gonna go. So depending upon where they go, like, Falcon may not even be involved with Cap.
At that point.
Like, we don't know. We don't know where these guys are going, because they're not canon.
We might not like where it's starting, but this doesn't
Rebirth
mean...
it better not be canon, is all I'm saying.
Well, I'm just saying this. So right now, it looks like they're setting it up so that Captain was a double agent all along. Okay. Granted, I mean, big blonde, blue-eyed, Aryan. I can kind of see where people would think that. But maybe we should wait and see what happens in the series before we really start.
We can wait and see if he's, like, pretending, but I have a feeling.
I mean, I think it'd be an interesting twist. But, I mean, this is Captain America.
No.
So, I mean...
No. Just by suggesting the twist, you have basically spat on the fucking franchise.
I'm just like, okay. You know what?
Like, literally, seriously, as soon as I saw the talk bubble, going Hail Hydra with that evil face, I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
He doesn't look evil. He looks
a menacing
really
look. It's a menacing
he looks
look.
Mean.
And it's designed to make
Hydra,
him look evil.
Mean bug. Anyway.
Seriously. So, we'll see how this plays out.
I know that's going on. There's this big thing on Twitter, like, give Captain America a boyfriend because of all that sexual tension between him and Bucky. And, I mean, Sebastian Stan is such a gorgeous specimen of man. And that fucking bicep curl with that helicopter scene, though. Put butter on those arms because I'm ready to eat. My God.
But anyway, so ultimately what I will say is, Civil War was a very entertaining movie. I enjoyed it immensely.
I agree. That's what we can agree on.
I've had a bunch of really great conversations about it and the themes that it brings up throughout the movie with all kinds of different people. And I think that that's a really good mark of great entertainment, is that it makes you think and it makes you question and it makes you conversate afterwards, as opposed to being like, yeah, that was fun, and you move on. So I highly recommend, if you haven't seen Civil War, even if you haven't read the comics, it is an enjoyable movie, and it will make you think. And so it is a great piece of entertainment to do that. So we had a bunch of fun with it, and we will continue this debate. And I don't think that we will ever agree completely 100%, but I think we can both agree now, because you were, like, fighting me on it, but I think we can both agree. Cap was totally in the wrong.
I didn't
you were
say
wrong,
he
though.
Wasn't.
He was... No, you did before. In your text message.
Well...
Check your test.
I was kind of like, I know, walking out of that movie. But I mean, like I said, I was conflicted. I'm like, I couldn't side with anyone. I was like,
yeah. But Cap was wrong, though.
But I mean, I was.
Everybody's wrong, but Cap was like real wrong, though.
I've retracted my, you know, hashtag, you know, Bucky, you know, don't blame Bucky. Because you're absolutely right. You can't absolve a sin just because.
The sinner was not
morally
in control.
And subconsciously, he's not in control. His
Correct.
Body still did those things. And you can't punish a body without punishing a mind.
Correct.
And sadly, he's got to live with that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, coming out of that movie, I was just like, you know, because you feel sympathy for a man who has no control over what he does.
But
that doesn't diminish the damage done by the action.
Correct.
So, I mean, and I...
So, as long as you take that back and we can both admit that Cap was wrong, like, then we're in a good place.
Yeah.
If you still want to side with Cap after that, then okay, fine.
I can take your little Hydra ass on over there.
But Bucky
that
was
I can
wrong.
Do. That I can... He's... Yes. And even though he's like, it's not me, it's like, but it is you.
It is.
And you have to accept that
it was
you.
And is you. And I think that's part of the reason why he's like, no, until this can get out of me, I have to go under. Because he knows.
He knows
I can be used
safe.
Again. I'm not safe.
Right.
As soon as anyone has
the smartest
words,
decision the man could have ever done.
Okay. Because he is a loaded weapon that does not have a control. Ha ha.
That's right. Yeah.
Theme for
so
whole movie.
I can,
loaded
I can
weapon.
Back, I can go back on my feelings on that. Because,
okay.
Yes, he has to pay for that.
So let's talk about anime. Because, let me tell you. I could have even more conversations about this movie, and I want to have more conversations about Uncharted, because I'm playing it through again, and oh boy, oh boy. So, because now I'm trying, like, to get all the treasures that I missed and shit like that, and I'm playing it on a higher difficulty, whatever.
Good okay. for you!
You know, because, I mean, hey, Nathan Drake. Like, it's my last outing with Nathan Drake, and I'm not ready for it to be over yet.
Ride that wave until you can't ride no more.
Right? And I'm not going to play multiplayer because I suck at the multiplayer. So, I have been watching anime, though. And, because I did pick up Overwatch this week, and I played a little bit of it. I'm going to play some more, and then I'll talk about it with you guys probably next week. Because we're also going to be ramping up for our E3 coverage. Whoop, whoop. I have gone back, and I was watching a bunch of anime on Funimation. As I was watching on Crunchyroll, and I wanted to talk about an anime that KBD had brought up when he went to Anime Boston, and I had mentioned that I was going to start watching it on an earlier podcast because it was starting to air on Crunchyroll, and I am addicted, so I'm going to talk about Kiznaiver.
Oh, yeah. That's on my queue of stuff to watch.
Okay, so you should watch it. I think that you would really enjoy it. So first of all, Kiznaiver is done by, it's produced by Trigger, which is the team that worked on Rage of the Bahamut.
Okay. Oh, I remember you watching that show and talking about it.
And if you have not watched Rage, like, especially you, Panda, you would love Rage of the Bahamut. And I believe that all of it is now currently on Hulu.
Okay.
So you can catch it. But Rage is really right up your alley because it has a lot of great action. Visually, its style is unbelievably gorgeous. And there are some moral and emotional dilemmas within it. Okay. So it's like perfectly up your alley.
I love me some of that. But anyway, yeah. Tell us a little bit about it.
All right, so Kiznaiver starts out and it almost appears like it's going to be a slice of life anime. It follows a bunch of students who are currently in high school. The main student that is in it is a character named Katsuhira. And, you know, he's got white hair and he's really unassuming. He gets bullied all the time. Especially by these two guys who constantly, like, take his lunch money every day, beat him up, and he just hands it over to him, and he seems kind of laissez-faire first, and then you realize, actually, no, he's not. He's not actually emotionally involved at all. He's actually just kind of almost apathetic.
Okay.
And just taking all the things that he's given, he speaks very slowly and in a monotone voice, and you start to realize that he seems to be like the absence of emotion. And what you learn is something happened to him early on. He's not completely aware of it, but he can't feel pain.
Oh.
In any way. So
emotionally
or physically, he does not feel pain.
Okay.
And you're like, well, how in the hell did that happen? You just right. Don't get it. But he does not. He has this friend named Chidori, and she sees him being picked on all the time, and so she tries to intervene and be around him often because she knows that, you know, these bullies won't pick on him if she's around because they don't want to actually hit a girl. So they're not complete monsters. They're just, you know, high school boys who have found
the target
and are using him. So one day, while he's getting his ass beat, okay, and these guys are talking about taking his money, and he's, like, apologizing because he doesn't have any money. This guy, who is kind of the stereotypical flamehead, if you will, you know.
All right.
Definitely into fighting. Like, if this was any other anime series, he'd probably be the leader of, like, some gang. He's got a big pompadour red, you know, set of hair, wears glasses.
They like to give bikers pompadours.
Yeah.
Like, badass pompadours.
They really do, and I'm not exactly sure.
I ain't mad about it.
I mean, I'm not saying that you can't, like, have that, but his name is Tenga, and he's basically, like, you know, I'm gonna save this guy, and I'm gonna beat these other two guys' ass, and what I'm gonna do is then tell them that they need to pay him back, and I'll just take a cut of, like, what they pay him back. So he's like, it's not that he's trying to be a hero, he's just worked out that these guys have taken, like, a lot of money from this dude, so I can beat them up, which will kind of even it out, and I can make some quick money, because I need money.
Right.
So Tenga goes, whoops these guys' ass, and is like, alright, you've got, like, a couple of days, and you're gonna pay him back his money. And I don't mean just what you took today. And one of the guys is like, we didn't get anything today, he doesn't have any money. He goes, it doesn't matter. You're going to pay him back every dime that you ever took from him. Every dime. So get it together, guys. And so he basically, you know, is like trolling Katsuhira so that he can get his money back. Because he's, you know, waiting for his, I think it's like 20% cut or 30% cut. Like, it's a huge cut. Katsuhira, like, thanks him and then goes on about his day. And they're in similar classes at school and it's going along. And you're realizing that, obviously, that Chidori, who's been Katsuhira's friend forever, actually has a thing for him, and he can't pick up on it because, again, he feels nothing.
Aw, that's gotta suck.
Okay. And she feels everything.
And then you
see this character with silver hair, which you know is a girl just from the length of her hair and the dress, like, noticing Katsuhira and then moving on. So you get introduced to a couple of other characters who are students at the school, and again, it feels very slice of lifey. And so you feel like you're going to go through this whole thing of, like, Chidori trying to get her senpai to notice her and all that
notice
kind of stuff.
Notice me, senpai, notice
and,
me!
And then have this other running line of, like, Tenga keeping these guys from beating his ass all the time and always trying to get them money. Like, that's what you feel like it's going to be the setup for. But then something happens. Nope. And Katsuhira gets kidnapped.
Oh.
And you find that he's, like, in some kind of base. It looks like military because there's, like, all this technology and screens around. And that's when you're introduced to Noriko and Sonozaki.
That's the blondie, right?
White hair. Blondie. She's got silver hair. You know, because hair color is very important.
Yes, it is.
Okay. So just like Katsuhira, she has silver hair.
Is she unfeeling too?
She doesn't show emotion. I don't know that she lacks it. Like it's obvious that Katsuhira can't feel pain. And you see through flashbacks as you get deeper into the series that he was part of some kind of experiment. And he had a partner who was like, look, you know, one day you'll be able to get your pain back. I'm sure of it. And he's got dark hair at the time. It's like brown. And he's crying. So at that moment, you can tell that he still feels pain. And this person, you're led to believe, commits suicide. And he feels like this immense, intense pain. And I think that's the thing that made him, like, turn his pain off, was that loss. And unfortunately, it stayed off for the rest of his life. So all through his childhood, no pain. No emotional connection. Okay. He understands, like, the need for emotional connection, and he can see it and identify it in other people, but he can't put that back. So, like, everything
kind
he relates.
Kind of gives him, like, it's very similar to, like, Asperger's or autism, where they can recognize, or sometimes they can recognize cues in other people, but they cannot properly, or they just don't properly emote those responses.
Right. He cannot emote. He can understand and process, and then will feed back a logic loop.
Right.
That will tell you why he came to his decision about something. But he cannot emote, and he cannot feel pain. So, like, you can, like, whack him with a sledgehammer, and while it will knock him out and damage his body, he will not feel the pain of that. And so Sonozaki has him tied up to this table. And you learn that somehow a bunch of these other characters that we've slowly been introduced to at the school have also been captured by these weird-looking characters. Okay, these helper characters that are all around their city wear these weird, super-deformed chicken suits. Is the best way I can describe them. Okay? All right, they've been kidnapped. And she's going in on all this stuff, and at one point, again, he's strapped down to this table, jumps up on top of him like she's going to rape him. And, of course, he has no reaction, including, you know, the overboard, oh my god, it's a girl on top of me, I'm going to bleed through my nose thing. Like, he has no emotion, and she's not showing any either. So it's not clear whether or not she can feel or not.
Okay.
But she does talk about situations and talk about things in a emotional way, which leads me to believe that she does have them. She just can't seem to emote them either. And so she lets him know that he is going to be part of this great experiment, that they've actually kicked off the Kizna experiment because they need to. Because people are leaving their island. And we learn that the island that all these people are on was actually set up as this big scientific experiment place where they were working on creating amazing soldiers that would be able to protect the world. And some scientists figured out that if they could distribute pain and fear across multiple people instead of in the one person, it would allow soldiers to move on, to last longer, and all that stuff. But because they hadn't really gotten close to deploying the system, some of the scientists lost their vision, left the city, and decided, hey, you know what? We don't actually need to work on this stuff. So they've now forcibly kicked off the Kizna system, which is kind of like, you know, the akin system, because everybody's sharing everything, with these students. And they're like, so what we were looking for were like these seven traits, kind of like the seven deadly sins, but we've updated them for new times. So instead of sloth, there's avarice and things like that, right? So you go through this whole thing, and basically each of the students that we've been introduced to is now a representation of these new updated sins. Right. And that's why they've all been implanted with the Kizna system. So what happens is, if one person in the group, initially it's only supposed to be feels pain, that pain is then distributed out through everybody else. So it could, depending upon the level of trauma that happens, keep someone from getting killed because their pain is split seven ways instead of one way. And they test this out by beating up Katsuhiro while he's locked on this table, and you see everybody else feeling that pain. Well, as they get out into the world, and Sonozaki comes up with all these situations for them to, like, go through various trainings, which some of them are just outings, to get used to the whole system and feeling stuff amongst the whole group, it starts to evolve and it moves beyond pain. Okay, they start sharing more emotions. So if someone feels anxiety, it now passes through all of them. Or if someone feels intense sorrow, it passes through all of them, and they start to rally and try to get to that person initially to make them stop feeling that way so that they will stop feeling that way. But ultimately, you know, they try to help. Like,
transition, right, to be
exactly
helpful.
Like Tenga, who's supposed to be like this delinquent, realizes very quickly that Chidori is in love with Katsuhiro. So he tries to set up all these situations all the time for Chidori to show up and be like this hero, or to take care of Katsuhiro, and is like always lining him up and like to Katsuhiro, like, you know, Chidori's cooking is amazing. She'd make a great wife, Katsuhiro. You should pay attention to that because her cooking is the bomb. And she'll be like, shut the fuck up. And he'll be like, no, get in there. And it's just so cute because, like, on the complete flip side of this delinquent is a sweet person. So it's a very interesting series in that everybody who
now,
was
wait,
brought
is, it, but is he helping her because he just feels, he's starting to feel like, is there, like, this awkward moment where, like, he's feeling this weird attraction?
Just, like, really realizes that she loves him and he thinks it's sweet and he wants to support her in being able to be recognized for caring.
Because I think that would be a really cute concept where, you know, this rough and tough guy is all of a sudden like, why am I having these? And then he realizes it's through this system.
Nope.
And he realizes that somebody on the team is harboring these strong...
No, but it's really weird because they have a masochist.
Oh, no.
And he's the last one that they bring in. So he's constantly trying to, like, get people to do crazy stuff, mostly because he knows that Katsuhiro can't feel pain. As soon as he learns that, he, like, goes into ecstasy and is, like, constantly trying to get Katsuhiro to do stuff where he'll get hurt so that he can feel that pain.
Oh, God. That is... Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's the purple-haired dude who constantly has bandages on because he's, like, trying to get Katsuhiro,
the ultimate feeling.
Yeah. And so he's interesting. Then you have Chidori, who's like the girl next door, you know, protector, and is straight up in love with Katsuhiro and has been for a while. You have your delinquent. You have another character named Niyama, who comes from a rich family and didn't want to just be known as, like, the blonde-haired rich person, so she's tried to fashion herself as an eccentric, so that way she'll stand out. So she tells people that she sees fairies, like, real-life fairies, but she actually doesn't.
Oh, gosh. Is she foreign also? Is that why she's blonde?
Yeah, I believe so, because she's blonde, and she doesn't look like any of the other characters. So she tries to be real quirky so that she'll stand out. But she's definitely, like, the chibi of the bunch. She's the youngest, the smallest. Then there's Yuta is basically he's the guap. Like, he's the best-looking guy at their school. Girls fawn over him all the time, and, like, he plays into that playboy thing. But he kind of has, like, eyes on this chick named Honoka, who is basically the studious, you know, I don't have time for your bullshit person. Yeah, and who is, like, off on her own. But the thing about Yuta is he wasn't always really handsome. Actually, in elementary and in middle school, he was super fat. And he was on a bunch of ads for products at the time. Yep. So, like, whenever he sees one of the ads with old fat him, he, like, freaks out and tries to throw it away. He won't eat, like, meat or protein. Because he doesn't want to ever get fat again. So, like, he's a boy with body issues.
Wow, that's an interesting... Right.
Everybody has, like, a different facet to them. Not just the one that is the prevalent thing and the sin, quote-unquote, that they represent. And Honoka has, like, all this deep stuff. She won't let people get close. And you learn some really neat stuff about her. So the characters are very interesting. They're multifaceted. They're not one-dimensional, which is really nice. Because usually in a series like this where you have, like, an ensemble group that's brought together, like, everybody has their one lane that they're in and the thing that they represent, and that's it. And these guys don't. And I like that a lot. And I think that's, you know, partly because it is Trigger that's doing this. They create really deep characters. And there is good action, and there's a very interesting kind of thing that's unfolding in the series. So if you haven't checked out Kiznaiver yet, I highly, highly recommend it. I also say, if you're not familiar with Trigger, definitely go back and check out Rage of the Bahamut. Right. And then watch Kiznaiver. It is one of my more favorite animes, like, of all time. Like, I would definitely put Kiznaiver in my top 10. It's not top 5. I'm only 6 episodes in, but it's definitely top 10. And that's a lot to say for a brand new IP new anime. But it's definitely going to be top 10. And we'll see if it cracks top 5. So.
Oh, wow. All right, then.
We'll see. I don't know that it will. I mean, because it's really, 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 really hard to, like, beat Ava.
And I mean, come on.
It's difficult to beat Ava. And, right. And you know, I've got Trigun in my top 5, and I also have Elfin Lied in my top 5.
Oh, man. That series, I enjoyed picking that apart immensely. There was just so many great things going on in that.
Yeah, and I would put Bebop in my top 5. So my top 5 is strong.
That should just be a given.
Right. But my top 5 is strong. So I don't know that Kiznaiver will break the top 5, but it's definitely already in the top 10.
Okay. It's a good choice. I happen to agree with a lot of your top 5 choices already, so... And yeah. I get a lot of my anime stuff, like, my interest in it came from you, so I have to
give you your deep thoughts. And my number 1 is just Akira, because that's the one that started me on the path, so it's got to be up there. So that's my 5. And then within my 10, I do have Ghost in the Shell in my top 10. It kind of swaps between 7 and 8, depending upon how I feel about other stuff, or if I go back and rewatch it. Code Geass is in my top 10.
I haven't watched it.
You haven't watched Geass? Oh.
I did not watch it.
Wow. Panda, you need to watch Geass. I think if you watch Geass, it might actually affect your life. You.
A lot of things affect my life.
I know, but I think, like, Geass would affect your life. Like, seriously, Geass is so up your alley. I'm really surprised that you haven't watched it.
I think when it came out, I was so engrossed in something else that I just never went back. That's what I think.
Yeah, you missed. You need to watch Geass. Like, more than Attack on Titan, you need to watch Geass.
Really?
Yeah, more than Titan, you need to watch Geass. For sure.
You say so.
I do.
Because, yeah. I mean, Geass Attack on 10. Titan was like...
Yo, Titan like will fight. Fuck with your emotions, but Geass will too, but in a different way.
Okay. It's really sad that I like getting my emotions fucked up. Like, you do. I want something to fuck up my emotions.
No, seriously. Seriously, Geass will fuck with your emotions so hard.
Okay.
So watch Geass. You gotta do that. Gotta watch it. That's a good one. Watch it. Okay. So, with that, I'm gonna wrap this sucker up because we've had a great conversation today. Or at least, I completely enjoyed it.
I did too.
I hope that you'd enjoy it. If you did, then make sure that you check out our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. That's electricsisterhood.com. You can find all of our news articles, our reviews, previews, editorials, all the stuff that we're finding interesting, that we're playing, that we're watching, that we're reading. You can hear about it, read about it at our website. You can also get our podcast there. New episodes go out every single week. You make sure that you check us out in iTunes, either on your desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device. Just search for the Eshcast Electric Sisterhood and subscribe. That way you'll get our brand new episodes the moment that we put them out on the web. If you don't have an iOS device, you can get our podcast through Stitcher Radio. You can get our podcast in Google Play if you're on Android. And you can also find our podcast on VogNetwork.com. It is a great network. We highly recommend that you check out all the stuff that they're writing about and great shows over there. You know, Video Game Outsiders, you've got Bobby Blackwolf, Anime Jam Session. There's just so much great entertainment over at VOG. You want to definitely check it out. Highly recommend it. VogNetwork.com. Also, be sure to check out all the great stuff that our entire team puts together. I love our team. I love how nerdy we are. I think you'll love how nerdy we are. So that starts off with the No Borders, No Race podcast hosted by our homeboy KBD over at b3crew.com. Definitely add them to your bookmarks. Grab their podcasts, new podcasts every week. Some great music, great conversation, and you just might learn a little Japanese too. So win-win-win situation there, guys. Also, make sure that you check out SmashRook.com, the homie Hamsterman2049, live streaming his Let's Plays every Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, on his Twitch channel. Make sure that you check out Smashed Rook and follow us on Facebook to learn when he's going to be streaming live so you can check out the stream. It's an absolute fun time. I highly, highly, highly recommend that you check it out. We also have in the family Phil's Recap and Review live recaps, as well as past show recaps. If you haven't checked out his Soprano stuff, I recommend that you do. Some really, really fun stuff in there. But he's currently doing recaps of Game of Thrones. Thrones stuff, though. Like, it's just crazy fun. And you can be a part of it. You can call in live. So definitely make sure that you check out Phil's Recap and Review on YouTube and the website, because he is the Issues guy. Issuesprogram.com. Definitely check that out. And of course, rounding out fam, nerdcrave.com. They've got the stuff that nerds crave. I'm talking anime, video games, comic books, you name it, they're covering it. So make sure that you check out all the people that make up the fam that is the Land of Esh. And hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/landofesh, to let us know what you like, share with your friends, invite them, recommend stuff for us to play and do. We are working on gearing up to do our Let's Plays. Guys, it's going to be so much fun, because it's basically just going to be a podcast, but with us playing games, so you can see it. It's going to be a party, y'all. So definitely make sure that you check out us on Facebook, interact with us, recommend stuff for us to play. Hit us up on Twitter at ESH News, and be sure to check out our Instagram feed at ESH News so you can see like photos from events that we go to and games that the entire team is playing. Especially when we get like on leaderboards and stuff. We'll probably share that out over there too. And we're going to make some photo stuff over there as well. So make sure that you engage with us on social. We love talking with you, hearing what you like, what you don't like, and things that you want us to investigate. So please be sure, hit us up, let us know about that stuff. I might be playing a game on Steam because of a recommendation that came through last week. So we'll see how that goes. We'll see how that goes. So as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, guys.
Peace, motherfuckers!